verses 11 through 18. I'm a good shepherd, that's right. So if somebody would mind reading that. In these Bibles, it's kind of right in the middle of a paragraph, so you have to kind of hunt it down a hair.
11 through what?
18. I'm just going to read it off of the bulletin if you'll follow along.
Okay.
Starting at 11 and going through verse 18. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Okay. All right. So, in John chapter 10, just to point something out, he actually is talking about sheep and shepherding a lot, and we're like halfway through, and we kind of don't get to the end of it even. This is sort of a section pulled out of the middle, but it's a section that kind of holds up on its own. So so let's look at it. He starts off by asserting that he is a good shepherd. Now, how is he drawing a distinction from the beginning about the difference between a good shepherd and a bad shepherd, or any old sort of shepherd?
Someone watching the flock is, if something, a wolf comes or something like that, he'll run and leave the sheep, you know, to be destroyed by them.
He's not the owner.
He's not the owner.
Right. So you can be doing the work of a shepherd, but not be the shepherd. And if you're doing the work of a shepherd, I'm almost envisioning a job where it asks you to do something either dangerous or risky, or you're like, this job ain't worth it, right. And you walk off.
You're not paying me enough.
You're not paying me enough for that.
Yeah.
And there's a distinction being drawn then about Jesus as a good shepherd and just someone who happens to be watching sheep as a job.
Right.
So he starts off with that distinction about, you know, being hired. And if something dangerous comes, what's the hired man going to do? He's going to leave. It's not worth it. You know, whatever I'm making per hour is not sufficient to maybe die because a dangerous animal has come for the sheep. But if those are your sheep, that is your livelihood. You know each one of them, and you've raised them from a lamb, thank you. I knew it wasn't. It was sheepling. What's that word again? Oh, lamb. Thanks.
Obviously not a shepherd.
Yeah. So, but they're important to you, and it's beyond a dollar amount, and it's beyond a job description, and so. What is the good shepherd willing to do when the wolf comes? That's right.
What you do.
That's right. And so how is Jesus demonstrated as the good shepherd? It's one thing to say it, and it's something else to prove it. Because talk is cheap. And anyone can say, oh, I'm there for you, baby.
Yeah.
You know, you can count on me, but then when something bad happens, they've mysteriously got another appointment across town. Okay, so how does Jesus put his money where his mouth is?
He dies for us.
So,
you gotta believe that.
You know, here is here is the wolf coming. The wolf of sin and the wolf of death. And rather than take off running, Jesus is willing to lay down his own life. And he does it for the sheep. Now, kind of moving down just a little bit, what else identifies the good shepherd versus any old person who happens to be working with sheep? So after the wolf part, what else does he say?
I know my sheep and my sheep know me.
Yeah, there's an intimate knowledge there. And I've got to think that if you are in the fields day in, day out, that you really know these sheep. And I've seen stuff about shepherds and, you know, that they'll have certain special calls or whistles or something like that. And the sheep can identify their shepherd versus somebody else's shepherd. And that's all about repetition. You know, if you hired a new shepherd and he came in with his own click or whistle or call, that sheep wouldn't know and they wouldn't come. How do they get to the point where they respond to you?
Repetitious.
You've got to spend the time with it. They've got to learn that's you, and you belong to me, and I belong to you. And when you make that sound is for me.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is the sheep mingle with the others. You know, you can't really, when you see them out there, you don't know who they belong to. But when they start their clicking.
And then they start separating out.
And they do.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. So what does that imply about Jesus himself, then?
Well, like his people know him, and he knows them.
That's right, and that's a knowledge that takes time, and it takes repetition. Now, how might we describe theologically that Jesus has spent the time with us to know us? How does Jesus know us?
Through his word.
Through his word.
God knew us from our mother's womb.
From our mother's womb, you know, throughout our entire lives. Even if we have not known him, he has known us. Now, there's a little section in here that could, you know, open up an entirely different direction to start talking about this passage, and we could spend a lot of time on it. And I did not get into it in the sermon. So even though I preached about John 10, there's a part of it that's, you know, pretty interesting and it's pretty weighty that I didn't mention at all. Any guesses? I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. What in the world is he talking about?
Evangelism.
Yeah. I'm talking about getting new people and saving them. Bringing them into the flock.
And he told us that when he leaves, the job is up to us.
Right. So. Yeah, it's a good point. That's right.
Okay, so who's listening to him right now, talking about being the good shepherd?
We are.
I hope you're listening.
Hopefully all Christians.
Making the speech, who is he talking to directly?
Apostles.
Maybe
some disciples.
Yeah, he's actually talking to a whole group of people, and Pharisees are included, a crowd is included, his apostles, his disciples, and so he is. He's talking to them. This actually happens in John right after he heals the man born blind. And what's the problem with healing the man born blind? Anybody remember? It's not that he heals him.
He did it on the Sabbath.
Does it on the Sabbath. That's right. And so the Pharisees come after him, saying, you know, how dare you? You have broken the law of Moses. And so Jesus starts teaching about what the law of Moses is really supposed to mean, and about how he has the authority and the power to do this. And it sort of segues into Jesus identifying himself as the good shepherd, which, you know, shepherd metaphors are all through the Old Testament, but, you know, those folks would have known the 23rd Psalm just like we do. It would not be lost on them this shepherding talk and being connected to God himself. So what's the demographic makeup of the people who are listening to him make this statement?
Well,
I'd say peasants and
rich and
anybody.
Okay. And by ethnic and religious persuasion, they are
Jews.
They are Jews. So a Pharisee could argue, okay, I believe that when King David wrote about the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, that he was telling the truth, and I believe that. In the 23rd Psalm, if you're talking to one of these people, who is God acting like a shepherd toward? Which group of people?
Jewish people.
Yeah, it's kind of narrow. You know? I mean, think about it. If the 23rd Psalm is concluding with, and you will prepare a table in front of my enemies, it's not everybody, right? This is not the Lord is everyone's shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And they're applying King David's Psalm to Israel. So what is Jesus here saying about God as the shepherd and people as sheep?
Well, he's getting in new people. He doesn't want just Jewish people. He wants everybody. And everybody's included. You can switch to him, to believe in him. Doesn't matter.
Jewish.
Right. You are not of this sheep pen. You are not of this flock, even. But there's a plan to have one flock. Instead of having many flocks, many sheep pens, many groups, there will be one flock and one shepherd. And so I like how he not only says that he's going to gather people together who are not of the current group, but the way that he does it, okay, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. What does that sentence say first off?
Well, he already knows some people.
And they're his.
Yeah.
And they're his. You know, there are people who are not of the sheep, of this sheep pen currently, but I have them. They belong to me.
Right. In reality.
The centurion is a good example of that. You know, he cured the centurion's daughter. And so you know that he was a Roman.
Yeah, he's a God-fearer.
Sure.
All right.
In reality, isn't everybody he made.
That's right.
So
I have other sheep that are not of the sheep pen. I must bring them also.
Great.
Whenever I hear or read must and shall, and words like that, what does that convey? Yeah, it's an order, or you're directed. It's gotta happen. It's not, yeah. I would like to, I want to, it's I must. I have to do this. All right? Now, they too will listen to my voice. And I don't know, that line just always strikes me. It's just there's a beauty to it. What does it make you think of?
Forecasting future, because they too will.
Okay.
Yeah. It's coming further down the road.
Whether
right?
I'm here or not, it's coming down.
Okay.
A lot of love that he has for us.
I don't know what just occurred to me, talking about the one flock, and right now there are many flocks, but there'll be one flock. And I look around me, and you ride down any street, and you've got 18 churches,
mm-hmm.
all different. Now, how does that comply with what he says?
She pens.
He says
but they don't. But it doesn't mean they don't belong to him.
They will hear my voice, so they know him already.
You know, this is, and again, we're just kind of getting to personal interpretations here, but I think that we will recognize his voice. And one of the things that I almost always bring up when I offer last rites said these very specific prayers that entrust someone into God's hands as they die. And I will often tell the person, sometimes unresponsive and unconscious, and you don't know what they hear and know, and sometimes a little more so, but when you hear the voice of God, it's okay. Go home. And that there's something about His voice that we will recognize, and He will call us and we'll listen. And I don't know. I mean, what's it going to sound like and all this other sort of stuff. But just some, at some level that we will know. And even if it happens at the moment of our death, but He'll call us and we can listen.
Say yes or no. Yesterday, Deacon Betty was our guest speaker, and she was talking about her life and, you know, the way God fit into her life. And she said everything was just horrible going on. Her life was a mess. And she prayed about it. And she said, "Am I supposed to be here all my life?" And she said, "God said to me, come out." And then she moves on and she tries a job and it's doing okay, but maybe that isn't what, is this what you want me to do? And God said, for now. And all through her life, every time she, you know, went right straight to God and said, what am I doing here? Is this right for me? Now. And I think that's a beautiful thing if we can look back and see all the things that we've done in our lives, good and bad, and somehow it's brought us to right now. This very morning.
I have an experience too, if I could share that. When my mom died, she was in the hospital and I wasn't there. And I finally gave up, you know, trying to look for a miracle to save her. And I prayed that God would take her. Just before, after that, three lights went out in my house, in her house. And two of them were fluorescent. And one of them was brand new. I replaced it myself. And fluorescent bulbs only blink and blink and blink a long time before they go out. These were gone. And then the phone rings, and the hospital told me my mom passed away. And that was her way of saying goodbye.
Turn the lights out.
You know, I mean, I know there's a hereafter. It's got to be.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we're all banking on that.
To be able to witness that, you know, is incredible. You know, so I think it's not a coincidence. You know, three lights going out, and they're all on different circuits. So.
Well, the reason my Father loves me is I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I receive from my Father. So, what do we make of these last sentences?
He's definitely saying he's going to die.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this happened halfway through John. So it's no secret, again, it shouldn't be a surprise, even though it kind of is. What else?
And the power to lay down and to take it again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I understand that completely.
Yeah. Maybe to accept.
It's not dying.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I think, a reference to death and resurrection, the power to lay it down and the power to raise it up again, the authority to do so. Remember we talked several weeks ago, or I don't know, might have been last calendar year, but power and authority, the difference between the two. Power is the ability to do something, and authority is the right to do something. You are authorized to do this act. Power means you can physically do it, or you can, you know, whatever. And so we want people to wield power with authority. Authority without power is useless. That's Barney Fife chasing somebody down, trying to make them, you know, comply to the law when they don't respect him. And power without authority is dangerous, because that's what people use to hurt other people, or to steal, or to take, or to dominate. They don't have the right to do it, but because might makes right, they do it. So we want power and authority together, and you know, Jesus has both. The power and authority to lay down his life, the power and authority to be raised again. But I think this is a good reminder. That the death of Jesus is a willing act. It's a willing act.
Yeah. He's God.
He didn't have to.
Walked away.
That's right. And I bring that up only because it can get into the, you know, oh, I reject the crucifixion because that's an angry God who is a cosmic child abuser and blah, blah, blah. Okay, Jesus has the ability to not die. He could have walked away, legions of angels, like he tells Pilate, or whatever. So they don't murder him so much as he lays down his life. It's a subtle point, but I think it's not unimportant to remember that it is a choice of power. Not a violent taking. I mean, there's violence in the cross, don't get me wrong. But in the sense of, he willingly chooses to do this for our sake. It's not like, oh no, don't crucify me! Ah! And then he dies. That's not it at all. But the difference between someone who is dragged away for your sake,
yeah,
versus the person who says, no, you stay here, I will go for you.
Well, in the garden, when the centurion brought his soldiers in and to arrest Jesus, and Peter tried to stop it,
mm-hmm,
and he said no. So Jesus, at that point, no.
Right, like a sheep before its shears is mute,
mm-hmm,
and he does not fight or argue, not with Pilate, not with the chief priest, not with anybody, but he. He accepts this. I mean, and it's not that it's going to be great. You know, Lord, if this cup can pass away from me, but thy will be done. So there is, I think, something worth remembering, not only in the moment that it happens, but he's telling them well in advance that this is the way it's going to be, that he will lay down his life for us. That is the difference between two people in a street, and a bus careens out of control, and it strikes the second one, kills them. And the first person says, wow, that could have been me. I'm so glad. Versus the bus careens out of control, and as it almost hits the first one, the second one shoves them out of the way to safety while they are run over and killed. That's a different kind of act. Where you're not saying, oh, that could have been me. You're saying, that should have been me. And this person laid down their life.
And I think the biggest point is that he died as a man like me and you. And he feels pain, he feels cold, and he feels warm.
Right.
Everything else, we can relate to his suffering.
Because he can relate
because
to ours.
He is. He was human.
Right.
He was, you know, felt the everything we felt. So we can only imagine what kind of pain he must have gone through in that sacrifice. So that's how I guess we can more relate to him dying for us. I think it really is a great way of presenting it to us. Unbelievable.
Okay.
I mean, it's not unbelievable. It's, you know what I mean.
We good?
Yeah.
Very good.
We good.
Thank you.
We good.